This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Captain Jason Stock, and I'm on the Tom Rowland Podcast.
Jason, what's going on?
Not much, man. Just kind of windy today. I was actually down on the boat doing a little housekeeping and a little magic eraser tidy up. And I'm back at the house chilling for a second, and we'll see some conversation about fish.
Yeah, man. So tell me about your fishing and what you do and what you go after and where you are.
The cool thing, I'm in the Bradenton, Florida area. Yeah. Anna Maria Island is the pass that I generally go out of, or longboat. But primarily focusing on near shore and offshore reefs and wrecks and natural bottoms, springs. This area, we have a really cool, diverse variety of species. I mean, depending on time of year, like lately, you know, we chatted prior for a few minutes. Lately, we've been having nice kingfish, a lot of bonita, amberjack, cobia, you know, goliaths, you know, good big fish for the clients to be excited and stoked about the day, you know?
Yeah.
And some meat to take home.
Right. Tell me about the springs. How are you, what are you doing with the springs? How do you use those?
Well, the springs, I'm going to be fishing them a lot, like the next couple months. They're actually not active. Like, I went to a meeting with Moat Marine. So back in the days, like, I think it's like 10 or 20,000 years ago, whatever, it used to be land all the way out, like 40, 50 miles, and Florida's shrunk. Those are actually sinkholes. So they're just underwater caves. Huh. And dude, the amount of fish on these springs is incredible. Like, you pull up, there's like thousands of amberjack, barracuda, cobia, African pompano, yellowtail, mangrove snapper, mutton snapper, sharks, goliaths. So you just never really know what you're going to get at those spots.
Like, yeah. I mean, we have some places like that in the Keys that we target. We've always called them like the Blue Hole and other places like
correct.
That. But they're way out in the Gulf, and you
yes.
get out there. And we don't go out there that much because, we're mostly inshore guys. But on a nice day, you know, we'll take the 26 out there, and that's the boat you're running too, right? The Yellowfin 26?
I got the 31 now.
You got the 31. Okay.
Yeah.
And you can do a ton of stuff in that boat. I mean,
The great thing about the 30, I kind of outgrew the 26 because, like, even my buddy's like, dude, my buddy, good friend Cody Chavez, I don't know if you know him, he's up in like Clearwater area, but he's like my best friend. He's like, dude, it's time to get a bigger one. You're spending 95% of your time way out there. And I was charging it too. But I mean, that 26 is an amazing boat. And it's comfortable. But, you know, the Gulf, when it gets gnarly, she gets gnarly quick.
Yeah.
Yes. It'll be slip bomb, and then it'll switch, and they're like, we got to run, guys.
So we'll fish similar type of areas, I guess, like what we call the Blue Hole, way out. You'll go out there, and I guess I should have known that was a spring, but it's just this, like you say, it's like this almost bottomless pit of, and I guess that's an old spring. That's the same type of stuff that you're fishing? You have more of those up there?
So actually a sinkhole. Like, so back in the days when it was land, it just made like an underwater sinkhole cavern.
Huh.
I'll send you a couple pictures. Like, I went to this Moat Marine scientist exhibit, and they kind of explained it. So basically you have like the edge of the spring, and then it goes below, and then it kind of cuts out. But they said at the bottom, I mean, they'll send like deep divers down there.
Yeah.
And like, check it out. Like, one, they found like a couple dead sawfish on the bottom, because I guess at the very bottom of it, there's not much oxygen.
Okay.
So, because it's so far down.
Yeah. Wow.
It's kind of trippy, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's totally super weird to even get out there. And like you're and the first time we ever went out there, you know, we had the numbers or whatever. You go out there and you're like, I don't see anything here. Like, there's nothing here. And then you kind of drift over and it's like you just see the depth finder just drop. Like, it's like, yeah, I think we found it. And then you just keep drifting and then it comes up on the other side. And, you know, on a calm day, you'll see all the fish on the surface. But on the first day we went out there, for whatever reason, the conditions weren't allowing us to see, you know, everything floating around and all the cobias and everything. But yeah, it's wild, those places.
I kind of prep my clients. We're pulling up to them like, all right, you guys ready? We're coming up on the critter hole. Like, cause the barracuda are brutal. You know, the big yellowtail get on them and like the mutton snapper and all that stuff. Like last year, the African pompano fishing was insane.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, dude, we'd have days where like, you're like, all right, we got to leave these. Cause you know, you're only allowed to keep two.
Right.
And you don't want to kill them.
Did you have the really big ones?
Oh dude, we get like the 40 pounders and stuff like that. But like, you'll get on a hot bite where it's like, you got doubles and triples and quads on African pompano.
That's awesome.
It was sick last year. So hopefully it's even remotely good as it was last year. It was really good, like January, February, March. So I'll start playing with those a little bit more. I've kind of been nice to them lately and keeping it within like 30 miles lately. But we do have some springs like 30, 35 miles, 40, 45, 50. You know, there's a couple wrecks and springs in between there. But it was pretty epic, too. In the late May, beginning June, the whale sharks were around this one spring, like 35 miles.
Wow.
The first day I found 8 of them. The next day there was 2. Next day there was another 2. And they were kind of chilling there and feeding very aggressively. And there was cobia on them and stuff. Like the first day, I was telling the clients, I was like, all right, guys, like, just keep your eyes open for whale sharks. And they're like, kind of like, yeah, whatever. And I'm like, they should be in this zone. And sure as can be, we see one. And I have my mate that's with me. He's back in Hawaii now. He's an awesome captain. So he was stoked. He's like, yeah, in Hawaii, they just like hang out. And these were like very aggressively like gorging. And I watched this thing on Nat Geo that said, when they're feeding like that, they're eating eggs. And you could see the sheen on top of the water. And I guarantee they're eating mangrove snapper eggs because, wow, like the mangrove snapper spawning in that area. So you got all this organic stuff going on. You got the whale sharks. There was like sailfish in there, wahoo, cobia, wow, giant mangrove snapper, red snapper and all that stuff. So like maybe the red snapper were spawning too. But I've noticed that like in that late May, June, the mangrove snapper are large and they're spawning and they're, I mean, dude, you're throwing out like large sardines to catch either tuna, and you'll have them like 10-pound mangrove snapper eating them on the surface and stuff.
Man, that is like, awesome. You know, that's one of my favorite fish. I love the mangrove snapper.
They're fun. I mean, those big ones, especially where they get all tricky and you got to downsize your leader and you can chum and do like the free line deal in the back of the boat. And that's my specialty. Like everybody, I'll have everybody on the bottom and I'll teach people how to do it. You know, because it's kind of like a feel game and guys get real impatient and they're like wiggling the rod all over the place. I'm like, bro, just keep the rod still. Keep feeding out your line. When the line goes 100 miles an hour, flip the bail and reel. And, you know, they love to do the bill dance and set the hook. And you're like,
yeah, no,
settle down.
You know, that's the exact same instruction that you have to give your kids in the canal behind your house with a mangrove snapper. And you're downsizing everything and they don't want to eat regular stuff and you have to, you know, use like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, kind of put the hook in there really good, feed them all the crust and then drop that in there and wait for the line to go 100 miles an hour and close the bail. Same exact thing. Those can be the hardest fish ever. Like a canal mangrove snapper, a big one in the canal or like what you're talking about. They have incredible eyesight, I think, those fish.
They got giant eyes. Like when you look at the big mangroves, you're like, jeez, dude, your eyeball's like this big.
Yeah, I know. And they're smart. They're really smart. They are. So I love those. That, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing. You're talking about the whale sharks eating those eggs on the surface. That's, you know, I always, you know, heard that fish will have like millions and millions of eggs.
Yes.
That's the purpose. Like millions, because you have a whale shark coming by and eating hundreds of thousands of them at a time.
Gorging themselves.
You're hoping you get, you know, 100 to actually turn into fish.
Correct. And then you got millions. The sardines that are eating the eggs. You got, there's a lot of stuff going on. And that's where really when you get into like the whole fisheries and try to understand it. I mean, there's different times of year where these fish are spawning, and there's, they you know, some spawn offshore. I mean, I feel like most fish spawn offshore. It seems like the mullet, you know, snooker on the beaches and passes, the tarpon go way offshore, like, you know, 90 miles. And that's crazy when you see those, you're like offshore, like 80, 90 miles. And you're like, tuna. And then you're like, what? And then you just see the giant school of tarpon just boogieing.
When you see that, how do you think that they're all on the surface, or is that, can you mark them or see?
Oh
that,
yeah.
You thick, mark, like all the way down through.
They're thick as can be. There's thousands of them.
Wow.
It's so epic. Like, I've witnessed it a handful of times for sure. And you're just like, what? But like, we know the deal. It's just cool when you visually see it. You know what I mean?
Do they bite like that? Do you ever have any?
I seen one guy on the gram got one day. Like they threw a bait into it. They like limited out a red snapper, caught a sailfish and hooked a tarpon 90 miles offshore.
That's a pretty good day.
Yeah, it's a great day. Like you're just like, what else you got? You know what I mean? And sometimes, you know, when you have those days with clients, they're like, Captain, is it going to be like that every time? You're like, yeah, bro, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah. Well, those whale sharks, like on the surface, that's a crowd pleaser. I mean, if you could have that every time, you wouldn't even need fishing rods. You just,
no, it's
like,
funny.
Oh, let's just go out there and look at those.
I've seen whale sharks out in the Gulf probably like 10 encounters now or eight, whatever. But it's definitely special every time. And that relationship that you have with the customer, the clients, they're like, even the one dude that we saw the eight with, it was a husband and wife that are veterinarians. And like, we got done, I like played up the cobia that we had, and dude like hugged me. Like, it was like, I was like the best man at his wedding when we got all wrapped up with the trip. It was awesome. Well, so, you know, there's like epic trips you have with those good clients and customers. It's not just the fishing, it's that memory and relationship that you gain with that person.
That's right. And funny thing about some of those epic days like that is that some of the things that you're talking about, like, oh, dude, that cobia you caught, that's a lifetime cobia. And he's like, oh, he's the whale shark, dude. Like, or you know, whatever. There's like, everyone has like that one thing that sticks with them and that made the whole day. And then all Correct. The other things are like second place and third place and distant fourths. But, you know, or maybe it's that his wife got to see a whale shark. Maybe that's something she's always wanted to see. I don't know. It's kind of interesting to put your, you know, we're so close to it a lot of times as a fishing guide that you're thinking, well, that sailfish was, you know, the longest, the biggest, the heaviest one I've ever caught. It's got to mean the same thing to him, but a lot of times it doesn't. Like,
you're right. It's about the experience that day.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have ways that you communicate with people before the trip, like to set expectations and,
I always check in with the customer the night before. That's the way I do it. Cause like you know, the deal, everybody's so fired up. They're like, what do we need to bring? What are we going to catch? What are we doing? I'm like, bro, let's just look at the weather and we'll make the call. Like sometimes I'll leave later in the day if it's like windy in the morning and calm in the afternoon and work that little window, or, you know, early and then get back. You know, when you're kind of in that routine of like starting out like 6:30 or 7 and you got everything ready, client shows up, you go grab your bait and then you go do the deal. Like I always have bait in my pen as like a starter pack, but I also have a first mate with me. We got like a giant 14 foot, you know, heavy half inch net that will catch the big thread fin or magnum pilchards or sabiki up the cigar minnows, runners or whatever, and then kind of have the plethora and then just go, all right, what do you guys want to do today? And then kind of go from there. You know, obviously certain times of year people get real fired up and they're like, all right, I want a tuna, I want a wahoo, I want a sailfish, I want a cobia, I want this and that. And you're like, dude, did you tell Santa Claus all that? I like hitting them with that one. They're like, what? You know, because you got to kind of make it fun and kind of mess with them a little bit, but not try to be a jerk about it.
Right.
You know, just kind of check them, be like, all right, can we just go fishing and see what happens?
Yeah. Usually it's the people that have no expectations that tend to do the best. Like, they just want to go out for a nice day of fishing, you know? That's when you see the whale sharks and 100 cobias on them and everything.
For sure. That's like, you know, they're like, oh, I just want to go out and enjoy the day. And you're just like, all right, perfect. I'm in, you know, because then there's not that pressure. You know, some people put so much pressure on them. Like, bro, you can't like call what's going to happen. I mean, we could try, but generally, you know, I like to achieve goals. So like, I'll kind of be like, all right, what fish you want to try to focus on? And I'll try to focus on that. But like, if you're in that realm, you got options for other species. You know what I mean? Like, if they're like, I want to go catch tuna, I'm like, all right, they've been in this area, let's go check this and check that and kind of keep it moving. Mm-hmm. You know?
You know, I wonder if you were a customer, you're going somewhere else, do you just, and I always kind of struggle with this because there are some times where I do want to catch a certain fish. Like, we're going to go to a different place. You're going to go to Hawaii, or you're going to go to some place where they have a fish that we don't have. And yes, it's like, okay, do I focus on that? And sometimes I really want to do that. Or sometimes I really want to focus on that. But a lot of times you get on somebody else's boat and they're like, what do you want to do? It's like, captain's choice. What would you do today?
Right? Yes, like, that's what I do.
Yeah. Like, what would you do? What's the best thing that we could do today? And sometimes you're going to find something like that that you may not have found if you said, well, I only want to catch, you know, giant trevally or something that we don't have, right? But if you leave it up to them, they're like, well, if it was me, I'd go out and do this because it only happens right now and it's fantastic.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's the best thing to do is communicate with the captain. And it's funny, like, I can be hands off. Like, I don't try to be like, oh, let me get up in here and tell you how to do it better. And I've noticed that sometimes some captains, when they come out on my boat, they'll try to do that. But I try to respect people's deal. You know, I've done the bluefin tuna fishing up there in Prince Edward Island, Canada.
Really nice.
But yeah. Brian Sears was one of the mates on there. He's actually flying in tomorrow. And the cool thing is he's became such an amazing friend. He runs out of Boston, but he was helping out as like the second mate up in PEI. And me and my wife took a trip from Portland, Maine, and drove up to PEI, Canada. And we stayed this little bed and breakfast deal. And I remember it was like a full moon. I woke up, like, you wake up at like 4 a.m. and it was like blowing like 30. And I'm like, all right, it's going to be rough. So we get down the marina and they're like, he's kind of like business mode sizing me up. So I got lucky. I got like a 700 pounder on the kite. And then I got a 1200 pounder and it was rough. Like, it was like 8 to 10 foot, but you're only 3 miles out.
Wow.
And catching, cause they have the herring. Even he said the fisheries changed since then. This was, I want to say this was like eight, nine years ago when I did that, but it was one of the coolest experiences. And I've never been that physically exhausted in my life. Like, two back to back big dogs in the chair.
Dude, put the heat on them. That is unbelievable. What did you, have you, previous to that trip, what, I mean, had you ever seen any, I mean, maybe a yellowfin or something that's pretty big? Like, what was the biggest thing that you might have seen before you go up there?
I've caught some big sharks here. We've caught those big hammerheads, like 15 foot. We landed one that was 15 foot. We hooked one year, it was like 21 foot long.
What did you think, though, when you saw that, when you saw one of those tuna for the first time?
Oh, dude, it's amazing. And even like, you know, my wife was like puking and seasick and she was kind of embarrassed and this and that. And she looks over the side and she literally looked at the 1200 pounder and started crying, like tearing up, like, holy cow. Cause it's like a majestic animal.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, seeing it in real life and seeing a picture, you know, it's two different deals, just like the eyeball, the tail, just, I mean, it looked like a fake creature cause it's so giant.
Yeah. They have that. I've seen some of these videos lately on Instagram and other places where they're throwing chum out there and those big giant tuna come up and they eat the chum and they don't make a single ripple on the surface. And there's like this, it looks like a 500, 800,000 pounder comes screaming up through there. And it doesn't even know. I had a trip that I was going to go, I guess, to the same area you were, and it fell through and I've never been able to find time to go back. But that is just amazing. Those fish are so incredible.
My buddy that's coming down, Brian Sears, I know I keep name dropping, but like, he's the man up there in Boston, and like him and his brother and his dad, like tag team it, and they're dialed in. Like really? They got like center console, and then they got a down east boat. It's called a, I think it's a Danel, but it's like, it looks like a lobster style boat, but it's like dialed in.
Yeah.
And I'll get you his number. You got to chat with him. And he's funny. Like he's come fishing with me, and he used to be like heavy OCD, like anal with all of his stuff. And like, then you'd come fishing with me, and we're fishing for like 10 or 12 different species on the same spot. And I'm just kind of like, when stuff gets crazy, you're just like, get it. And then regroup and then see like what fish you want to fish for. You know, like he's been with me a bunch. He's like, dude, it's crazy. You know, he'll want to bring all the fancy stuff. I was like, let's bring a kite. Let's do this. Let's do that. I'm like, no, bro, let's just throw out a bait. Let's just catch them. And then like, you know, I'll have like the crabs for permit. So we're fishing for permit, tuna, cobia, snapper, all at the same time on the same wreck or reef that we're fishing. You know what I mean?
So was that new to him to have so many of those species, or had he?
He was tripping out. He's like, that's what I like about it down there. And he's like, God, but it's funny. He'll complain about the amberjack. He's like, dude, I want no part of those things. I'm like, bro, you catch giant bluefin, you're scared of an amberjack.
That, you know? That is a testament to the amberjack and the reef donkey. Like, I mean, if he doesn't want to catch them, then who would want to catch them? I mean, you don't want to catch them, for anybody that doesn't understand, is they're just hard to fight. Like, you catch a couple and you're like, okay, that's enough. Like, I think I've had enough.
What I do in the wintertime this time of year is like, I'll focus on the real big ones because they come in shallow, and I'll catch them. The one I caught one year, we catch them like 90 to 100 pounds, but we had one, I swear, it was like 130 pounds.
Jeez.
There was four anglers, and it like killed all four anglers, and we were only in 60 feet of water. So I found that the big dogs come in shallow this time of year, and I got the whole puzzle together. It's like a little secret trick that we'll do. And so I'll do that, and I'll kind of establish the safe word with them and let them, like I had these guys from Green Bay, and they were wearing like full Green Bay Packer get up. I was like, what's the safe word? And they're like screaming out. They're like, cheese. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so that's when you need a break.
That's when you tap out. That's when you tap out, and you got to pass the rod off to somebody else, but you got to make them like feel bad about it.
Yes.
You know, so or funny. They kind of like, or like pineapple, you know, or just make it fun. And,
yeah.
You know, I had this lady actually recently, this is about a month ago or 2-3 weeks ago, we were fishing a shallow wreck, and, you know, we're chumming up, we're catching amberjack, and I think we lost a couple cobia and whatever, and then we caught like a close to 20 pound black grouper, just random on a flat line, like catching amberjack, but you know, she tried to tap out on it, and then she got it in, and we were like, whoa, because you know, that's like they're here, it's just not super common, you know, it is. But anyways, there's been more mutton snapper and black grouper up this way after the hurricane. You know, so I don't know if you heard that, like Hurricane, I think it was Ian.
Yeah.
You know, with that ferocious wind, a lot of fish migrated up here. So we're seeing more black grouper, we're seeing more yellowtail, we're seeing more muttons and stuff like that here.
Interesting. That always seems to happen with hurricanes. Not necessarily that happens, but something always seems to change. I've always kind of looked at hurricanes as they're not good for anything man-made, but anything natural, it almost seems to help in a lot of ways. Everything okay on your end?
Yeah, sorry. I had the client kind of texting me. I'm just like, I'm on a deal right now. But but did you hear about the flamingos that migrated up, this way?
We've seen a lot of flamingos in the Keys this year, more so than ever. And then I posted one on my Instagram. You know, there were like a dozen of them out there. And then people started saying, oh, I've seen them here. And there were some that were way north, like that people were seeing flamingos way north.
Yeah.
How many of you, do you see them regularly right now?
No, I haven't seen any, but there's been a couple friends that have got pictures on the beach and stuff like that. Let me just text this dude back.
Yeah. It's what happens when you're charter captain in high demand.
Yeah.
There's no break.
There is no break. And I think it's like sometimes like the frustrating thing with some people because they feel like they're the only person. And you sort of like, dude, just pump the brakes for a second. Let me get through this guy. Let me get through this next guy. And just day by day. Like, yeah. Even like for people around the holidays, I know they're excited and they're like, are we still good? December 27th. What time? I'm like, bro, I don't know. Like, let's just, whatever the weather's going to do, we'll figure out a game plan the night before, just like everybody else. But some people just can't handle that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, today you've got like so many different ways you book things, Airbnb, Uber, all of these other things to where you just, you know, you just push a button on your phone and it says show up at this exact time. And that's how it works. But fishing's a little bit different. How many people do you have that are first time clients at this point in your career?
There's a handful more people that have been fishing with me a lot over the years. Like I got some like guys that have been fishing with me for 20 years now. Mm-hmm. One of my heavy regulars, he's 92. I used to take him out in a tandem kayak, and then I had a skiff I was running at Hell's Bay, and then I had a Hansen, another Hansen. And I mean, legit 92 years old. It's like taking Weekend at Bernie's, we'll put him in the beanbag. And now he just wants to catch permit. That's it.
That's
it. He don't care about anything else. He's like, hey, how's the permit fish? I'm like, it's good. He'll be chilling and, you know, the rod will go off and I'll just like pop out of the beanbag, fight the fish, go back to chilling and just telling stories.
That's what I want to do. Pop out of a beanbag at 92. That sounds pretty awesome.
We gotta help him out. Yeah, like grab him.
Yeah, well, my dad is 85 and I just took him on a duck and goose hunting trip to Saskatchewan, and we were fishing. Right. We were hunting layout blinds, and he was good getting in, but to get out, it was a little bit slower.
Right? I can see it.
There's no popping out of a layout blind, but you know, that's what I want to do. Whatever, go hunting, go fishing, catching permit at 92. Like that's the guy you need to ask the. What's the secret, right? Like,
They say outdoors and fishing. Another guy had too, same thing, but he just passed away. He had that J&H tackle. His name was Harry.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard of this guy, but he has a condo in Long, or he had a condo. He just passed away this past year, like, I think like 6-8 months ago. Anyways, same thing. He just wanted to catch permit like all the time. It's funny when my clients get stuck on the permit, they're like, they'll just call me and be like, are they biting? Are they biting? I'm like, yeah, they're biting. And they're like, all right, what day can we go? You know, it's like they're trying to get their fix of permit. They're like, come on.
Yeah.
Well, because we got
it's a good fish. Like, I would think, you know, they're very exciting. They're pretty. You don't have them in a lot of different places. Like, there's a lot of places where you don't, like, if you're from North Florida or something, you're not going to find a lot of them. And then, you know, they fight hard, but not too hard. Like for somebody that's getting older, like you don't want the amberjacks anymore. You don't want, like, there's probably a whole bunch of things that you don't want, but the permit, you know, it's a pretty predictable fight. They kind of do their thing. They take off running, then they kind of do a couple circles and here they are. And then they act like gentlemen and ladies when you, but yeah, they don't try to kill you, but when you get them in, then they act like gentlemen. They're not trying to bite you or,
yeah,
you know, like those, a cobia the, or something, like break your leg.
Like, yeah.
You don't have to gaff them. You know, it's nice. It's like, it's pretty tame for a, you know, somebody that's maybe caught a bunch of different fish and they're like, well,
for
that's
sure
the one I like.
But you know, those big 30, 40 pounders, they just straight work people, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when they think, like, you know, the deal, like you see the guy come in real hot on the rod and he's like trying his, he's doing it fast. You're like, slow down, you know? You know, they're like, you know, jerking the rod. You're like, all right. Especially those shallow wrecks, they're gnarly. And like some of the reefs that I'm fishing are like a straight minefield of structure because we got the old Skyway Bridge rubble out here.
Yeah. So how far out is that? How far out does that?
So we got off Anna Maria, we have the 1-3-7 mile north and south reefs. So 1 mile reef's amazing. The 3 mile south's amazing. The 3 mile north's amazing. The 7 mile north, the 7 mile south. And those fish just kind of basically travel from reef to reef according to the crab flow. And dude, we have like one of the sickest crab flushes like out of our passes, like Egmont, Longboat. It's full on Nat Geo. And it's fun because you can just go dip crabs with the buddies or with your clients. And sometimes the customer liked dipping the crabs better than the tarpon fishing or the permit fishing.
Yeah. Well, that's how, like, I take my kids fishing, right? When they were little, like anything like that. Like, we did the jelly ball thing where you dip the jellyfish and then you catch the, what was that we were catching, those black and white fish, the spade fish.
Spade fish, yeah. Yeah,
that was super fun. The kids love they like catching the jellyfish better than catching the fish. Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good. But like what we talked about earlier, it's like something that might be not eventful for us because we're so used to it and numb to it is very exciting to somebody that's never experienced it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's definitely, I definitely, you know, sometimes you got to take a step back and be like, wow, that is pretty cool. But we're just so used to it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost like work, you know, to go get the bait. So we catch the fish. But then when you step back and you look at it, you're like, they actually like catching the bait more, especially if you bring a kid or, you know, somebody that doesn't have a lot of experience. And then you get to see the whole food chain. Like,
yeah,
we're going to catch this. Then we're going to catch that. And then we're going to catch that over there.
Yeah. Even one of my clients called it Darwinism, you know? So like on some of the wrecks, you know, you're catching, you know, you sabiki up the sardines, you throw the sardine, you catch a tuna, you know, bonita or amberjack, and then you're fighting it on the wreck. And then you got to worry about the amberjack goliath eating more the shark, and then, or the barracuda, or all three. So you got that, like the full circle right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when you were telling that story about your 92-year-old client, you mentioned that you started out in a kayak and a tandem kayak, and then you mentioned all these different boats. How did you get started? Did you start in guiding out of kayaks?
Yeah. I used to have my kayak business. It was called JM Snooky Kayak Charters. So my cousin used to call me JM Snooky because I would go fishing before and after work. I worked in St. Pete, Florida. So I grew up in St. Petersburg, and like people were begging me to take them fishing all the time. And I was like, I was going like hardcore, like every day, all day. I'd go to the shop. Like I'd work at the kayak shop from like 4 to 7 or 3 to 7, come in hot, sell some kayaks, make good money. Cause I was on commission. So my uncle owned the kayak shop, which he sold to my cousin just recently. And my older brother worked there. So it was a family business. So it was cool. And I would work like, I don't know, I think like before, like I left when I was 21, cause I got on a 43 Cabo and started working down in Key West for a couple months. I was like, I don't want to be at a kayak shop. I'd rather just fish it. So that's when I went full time, is when I was 21, but right out of high school, I was guiding 18 years old, just taking people out in the kayak.
Nice.
So, and like, and then the St. Pete area, you know, down the road, I would have a wintertime snook spot that you go catch 40 inch snook regularly, like every day sometimes, or like, you know, little ones to daddies, but like I would go, or mamas, I guess you call it, the females, but large fish. And then I would go do a kayak trip in the morning, go to the kayak shop. And then if I was real fired up, I'd go again at night and go night fishing too, you know?
Wow.
But you know, now as I'm getting a little bit older, I'm focusing on, you know, what we briefly talked about, the reef project.
Yeah, tell me about that.
So, you know, I got a nonprofit underway, got all legit with the 513, and, you know, I'm actually planning an event on Anna Maria, April 21st. And we're going to do like food and drinks and have like three bands and kind of get the whole community engaged. And actually the first project we're doing for this artificial reef is for a guy that was a island guy. He was like a Cali. We used to call him like a Cali frother, but he had a heart attack and died. So it wasn't his wife, but it was like pretty much his wife. She gave me his ashes and she's like, I know you know what to do. So I started a GoFundMe and got it up to like $6,000 from now. And I'm working with Manatee County on the permitting. So then I got to pay the guy $2,000 to do the permitting of the paperwork and all that stuff.
Paperwork and for what?
Materials for, arranged.
For, oh, wait, no. What are you getting the paperwork for?
To pull a permit for the spot.
Oh, so to like, put an artificial reef.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. I thought you were having to dispose of his ashes, but you're going, so the idea is to put down an artificial reef in this guy's honor.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the plan. We're going to do that, and it's going to be basically 22 miles off of Anna Maria. We got it all surveyed by FWC, but there's a lot of like, you know, just slower. It's not as fast as what I would like for it to be done. If it was my, up to my deal, it'd be, we're already up like a million of them out there, but you know the deal. It's a slow and steady process. It's exciting. And basically everybody I talk to, they're like, dude, I'm in, what do I have to do? Like, so I figure we'll do like a big fundraising event, kind of get more people engaged and involved. And the cool thing is my brother has a shirt and apparel business. So I have him do my hats, the full Sang gear. And then I have a couple designs that his guy that works for him was able to create. And, you know, I'll come up with different ideas. And the cool thing is I called him right before, you know, I got on this podcast and he, you know, helped me order business cards. And this time of year, you know, I'm kind of ramping up for a season. So I'm putting my brochures and all the restaurants and places, tackle shops and stuff. And then, you know, spreading the merch around with hats and shirts, and people feel good if you give them merch.
Yes.
You give them a hat and a shirt and a stack of brochures. They're like, dude, I'm going to tell everybody.
Yeah, for sure. That's interesting. So, you know, how to navigate charter businesses in this day that we're living in with social media and websites and everything else that they're, you know, a lot of guides don't do that anymore. They don't go to the hotels or to the restaurants or to the places and put brochures out. Like you're still getting a lot of business from that.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, those
to the social,
both, you got to kind of do everything nowadays. You got to kind of be willing to talk to people. I don't do as many seminars as I used to back in the days. Those were good. You know, I just kind of, the social media is huge. Like, the Instagram stuff, like I constantly just like post pictures and fishing videos, like, and kind of have fun with it. And then when I'm watching my kids, I'll, you know, include them. So I show the personal side, but I try to show a little bit, like, look, I'm not just fishing all day, every day. I still got to do stuff. Like, even I was just, you know, it's funny to mess with people, but also I keep in touch with people all over the world. Like,
yeah.
I got this kid that was one of my mates and he lives in Aruba. And literally we'll talk almost every single day.
Really?
Oh yeah. Like we chat. He's like, Kepi, what's up? And he's like, I got tree wahoo yesterday. And then we lost a blue marlin. And then I think I'm going to go catch some barracudas this afternoon. And then like, you know, and then he'll send me a video. Like, you know, they sell a lot of fish to the restaurants there. And, you know, he dives and, you know, does a lot of stuff. But also he worked with me, came down and chilled for like a month and, you know, let him stay at my house and, you know, showed him around. And he was there for like prime time tarpon season.
Oh.
So I tried to get him to come back one year and they called me from the airport. And they're like, what are your intentions with Brian? I'm like, dude, like, he's just coming to stay down at the house. We're going to, well, how much money are you going to pay? I'm like, dude, we haven't even figured that out yet. He's just hanging out. So what? They basically.
Is he on some list?
Well, no, they wouldn't let him come to Florida. So I had to, like, to get him to come back, I got to get like a work visa and all that. I'm like, dude,
really?
Yeah. It was like,
we could go tarpon fishing.
You know, the way it is, like, everything's always more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in some ways I'm like you say, I know the deal on the artificial reef and I don't actually.
So okay.
What is involved in creating an artificial reef? And certainly a lot of the people that listen to the podcast don't know what's involved.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah. You know, and sometimes I've been learning a lot throughout this whole process and navigating. The main thing is they don't want to put an artificial reef. Like, you have to get it surveyed so there's not already natural bottom there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you put it on sand with a little bit of rock, but you can't put it on a live active ledge or coral. So what you're trying to do is create habitat. But by doing so,
you don't want to destroy. You have to have
it surveyed. And the area is a quarter mile by quarter mile zone. So that's 56 acres. Boom.
Okay.
You got a 56 acre square and you could put that rubble. So the materials that are like certified are concrete and steel. That's it.
Hmm.
So, and there's actually a really good documentary on, I think it was Hulu or it's called Artificial Reefs.
Okay.
And it's pretty awesome because it does educate you. And it shows you all the different reefs all over the world. Like they go into the Keys reefs. Rotunda, like pretty cool stuff. And they're like, it shows that if you put something that wasn't there, it's teeming with light and you're creating habitat, filtration. And for like the save the dive boats, they can go dive a wreck.
Right.
And then they're not messing with the natural ledge that's nearby.
Right.
So, right. And the way like people, this is an argument like I've had with some people, well, you just want it to be easier to catch fish. I'm like, bro, I got like a million spots that I can catch fish. I just would like to have where we're not all fighting to go to the same wreck. And, you know, people like throw their hands up and you're just like, dude, this is a public wreck. Like we both can fish it.
Right. But some people are saying that they're opposed to creating more structure.
Well, that's just an argument when you have people like, you know, it is like some people are like, oh, yeah, you know what? Why would you want to do that? You're just going to make it this. And I'm like, no, dude. Because a lot of times, like the best way to describe it is I've heard from commercial fishermen like that around here, like they'll be like, these fish are have tails with no homes. So they're constantly journeying and traveling back and forth. But if you have places where, or like a hub or a place where they can frequent different times of year, and sometimes they spawn on that. So you're creating an oasis in the middle of the desert for some right. places. And right. let's face it. I mean, we know that, I mean, I'd say now I probably fish artificial reefs and wrecks 80% of my career.
Wow. Yeah.
Like I'll fish natural bottom for grouper and snapper, but I mean, even we're catching grouper and snapper obviously on the artificial structures a lot, but you know, I have big ledges and stuff like that where I want to, you know, we get, you know, red grouper, gag grouper, mangrove snapper, you know, like the whole plethora of species. Yeah. But with the bottom fish being primarily closed right now, you got to kind of get a little creative, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So I've been doing the kingfish.
But it's also good for the, like you say, you know, the fish are spawning there and you're also creating habitat that protects them from other predators. And
correct.
You have places where, I mean, I don't know. It seems to be good for everything.
Oh yeah. No, when you go down the benefits, like let's say the pros outweigh the cons, you know, like, and mm-hmm. that's what I've done. I had an argument or a conversation with somebody and you're like, how is this beneficial? And you go, well, first off, you got, you know, habitat, you got an economic benefit. So a charter captain or a recreational fisherman can go out and feel good about going to a spot that they know is there and it's public.
Right.
So it's not anybody's special spot. That's what like everybody gets fired up like, oh, you know, I've been fishing that one for 20 years. And you're like, cool, dude. Like, so have I.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and when people want to get all bent out of shape on fishing on a private wreck, you know, sometimes you got to just let them know. You might have to exchange a few words if they get real, real fired up. You know what I mean? Yeah. But at the end of the day, you got to be like, look, dude, we can fish this together or you can be a jerk.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, the people that know how to fish it together, it's no big deal. Right. Like,
correct.
Like I'm not going to get in your way. You're not going to get in my way. You know, like which way the current's flowing and what this,
correct.
What that person's trying to do. Cause you've been there before. You've seen it. You've been in that same situation. You look over correct. There and you're like, that guy's in the spot. I'd really like to be there, but we're not going to go. Maybe we can drift behind him and do the same thing he's doing.
Or I feel like the best way to do is communicate. Be like, hey, buddy, you mind? Which side do you want me to slide in on?
Right. I'm that's coming in either way. Which
yeah,
way do
I'm
you want me to slide in?
I'm coming in hot. I'm not coming in.
Right.
If I ran that distance to get to that location, I'm going to do something there. Like you said, creep around the outsides or set up. And I mean, nowadays I use the trolling motor anchors, which do you guys use
yes,
as well?
For sure.
I tell you what, man, I got that new one, the power pole. It's been pretty awesome. It's definitely got some torque. I had like a meaty bracket on it. My buddy made for it and I was fishing last Sunday and it actually broke the bolts off.
Whoa.
So they're making a meatier bracket. Even my buddy goes, dude, you got to make it Jason stock proof because you're going to break it for sure if it's not real strong.
That motor is the best I've ever seen. It's so quiet and
it's
it has
incredible.
So much
like,
power. And if you have lithium batteries on that too.
Yes, that's what I got. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's like
it's a game changer.
Outboard. Like,
yeah, it's a game changer. It really is. Like, I mean, And again, the efficiency, it's the time management that day.
Right.
So in a day you can hit, dude, as many spots as you want. And I keep it moving. If we're not catching them, I'm not hanging out.
See, that's the big, that's using it inshore is one thing. Like we've used trolling motors inshore for a long time.
Correct. Yeah.
But using it offshore is totally different because in order to just even go to a place to see if you wanted to stay there in the past, we're dropping 200 feet of anchor line. You know, you're doing all this stuff. You know, like, okay, if they're not here, we're probably going to stay here for an hour anyway because we just dropped anchor. We're going to have to put the anchor ball out. We're going to have to pick it up. This is going to be a whole operation. It's going to be me by myself because I've got two 90-year-old clients. Like, once you drop the anchor,
you're committed.
You're there for a while.
Yeah.
Right? And sometimes, you know, you drop it in exactly the right spot and it all happens great. Everything's great. But that's what I find with these trolling motors is so much better. You can stop. We're here for 15 minutes. I really like this. Let's go.
Yeah. And what I've done for some of the real big fish to land them is I'll turn the trolling motor off and then get off the structure.
Yes, for sure.
Like the big permit and big Kobe on the wrecks. Like, so we hook up, like everybody reel their stuff in and I'll just go sometime like full Marlin style back out off the wreck, kick them off the wreck and then kind of fight them off in the sand.
Yeah. That's, yeah, the same way for us with our permit, but I fish the permit on the wrecks in much shallower water probably than you are on the, like, in the areas where we can actually even see the wreck sometimes and you see the permit on top of it.
Yeah.
And you can come in down tide to where the permit are facing into the tide, right? So you come up from behind them, you see them, throw the crab in there, you hook one, turn the trolling motor off, and you just ease out of there.
Yeah. Right?
Without ever disturbing anything, you're just picking one off the side. And you can do that for all day, right?
Well, that's the fun part about the strategy, isn't it? When you kind of like, when you get it dialed in and you're just like, all right, they're going to be right here. I'm going to creep in and I'm going to do a little sneak on them. They don't even know what's up. And you're like, but even like say in the springtime, we get the giant schools on the surface where they could be 100 or a couple thousand and they're all tight and they're finning and they're flashing and doing the deal and they're putting their eyeball out of the water and well, if you get a couple boats that get hot on the deal and they're like charging in like too fast or whatever, you know, they keep spooking them, you're like, bro, like you'll talk to them, be like, hey, can you just like settle down or just like chill in one spot rather than come in hot and spook them and then you gotta wait for them to pop back up and get comfortable again,
right? They just don't have the experience of knowing that they're going to come back up. And like, if you just ease in there, or they don't have the trolling motors, right? So
pretty much most of the boys down here all have the trolling motor. Now it's really changed the fishery. And I tell you what, for the tarpon fishery, it's changed a lot too, because you know, when the fish would get in the past, we'd all just chum them. It's changed year after year. I mean, dude, when we were fishing Bean Point, like 10 years ago, we'd catch like 30 or 40 tarpon a day or hook 30 or 40 tarpon. Now you're like a good day is like 5 or 6 or whatever. But like, I feel like the fish have just gotten smarter too.
You think that?
Do you
attribute that to the trolling motor or?
Well, all right. So when we do it in the past, like say sometimes it'll be like almost like Boca Grande style where there'll be 40 to 50 boats and everybody's staggered and anchored up. But if you get everybody where they're coming in hot and like getting too aggressive on the fish keep like shifting around.
Yes.
So you're kind of playing like a game of cat and mouse with them. And if everybody's pressuring them hard, they just keep sliding the pass. So they'll start out. This is generally the scenario at Bean Point in the, you know, prime time, May, June. And the fish start out, they come in the pass, they'll be on the bar or they'll be in the pass at sunrise. You can usually get the crab bite first thing, get a couple fish or get a double or triple, or hopefully, you know, and like at least take the pressure off. As the sun comes up and the tide's coming in, we'll dead bait them a lot of times with like dead thread fins. So everybody will chum them up and you get them like they're like raccoons. So you have all these people chumming and you're just feeding them out. And I heard that the boys were doing that in Key West Harbor.
Yeah, for a long time. You know, it's changed there too.
Yeah. So that's what I'm getting at is like the fish, the tarpon with the trolling motors do get wise to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they can feel the vibration or whatnot, but you know, even when you're beach fishing them, you still got to have that strategy of how you're going to approach them when they're migrating. And then when they stop and they start milling and you're like, all right, guys, this is our shot. Be ready. Watch your cork. And you see the cork go down. You're like, reel. And they're like looking at the sky and you're like, dude, that was your shot. That was, you know,
it's the whole reason we're out here.
Yeah, and then you're like, all right, are you like, all right, guys, stay focused, stay focused. I'm like, man, we want to catch them. I'm like, bro, you've had four bites. I watch your cork go down. I'm the one throwing them, handing you the rod every time. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it is fun. You know that.
Like, no, it's fun.
The strategy part, I think, for us is what keeps us into it, engaged, interested, intrigued, and you're always trying to do it better. But you can always talk to, you know, I got a couple captains, like I'll check in with, be like, hey, what are you seeing down the beach? Yeah, there's a good flow of fish going north. There's a good flow of fish going south. I got my bite like an hour ago on a thread fin. They've been real technical, blah, blah, blah. Be like, they tell you what, check this area around this time. They should show up there. You know the deal. It's like good to communicate with a handful of good captains that are dialed in, respectful, and they're not trying to mess you up.
Right. Man, you know, that goes a long way. I mean, I think today you have to have that. You have to have your network of people that you can communicate with. And even if it's just after the trip, like you come in, you call your friend, you're like, hey, where were you today? They were 100 miles somewhere else. Well, you have no idea what was going on there until you talk to them. And he has no idea what was going on where you were. You don't necessarily have to communicate throughout the day a lot of times, but that communication of just like, you know, maybe it's even around the fillet table of just like, yeah, we were up here, we saw this, or the water was really green, or like it wasn't good where I was, you know? I mean, that information is gold.
I agree. You're eliminating areas where not to go.
Yeah. I mean, that's as much of anything. I mean, if you're a great fisherman or a great guide that's been guiding for 20 years, and you get in an area where the water looks good, the bait's there, you're going to catch some fish. But if you make a 60-mile run into an area where, for whatever reason, the water quality's not good or you're not finding what you're looking for, I mean, I don't care how good you are. That's not where the fish are. They've moved out of there, or it's not happening. And just a little bit of information could have put you, you know, or at least eliminated that area.
It is funny to mess with each other too. So like, I got a couple of guys, we'll call each other and get each other frazzled. Be like, oh dude, you don't want to go here. It's so epic. And I'm like, I'll mess up. Hold on. I'm running into bad reception. And then I'll just like hang up on them. And I'm like, come on, don't do that to me. Where are you going?
That's how you know that it's really good, is how bad your friend tells you it is. Oh man, no, you don't want to go over there. I mean, it is gross and the water's green. I haven't seen a fish there, but they watched you leave the marina and go in that direction 3 days in a row now. They're not dumb.
Yeah, no, it is like, no, I usually come off of it like with my close friends, but you know, one thing I have learned in the social media, and even people are like, where are you catching this at? Where are you catching that at? I'm like, I can't tell you, dude, because I'm going to go there the next day. If I'm on like a program of tuna or permit, last thing I want to do is, some days you'll get like 30 people that'll be like, yo, where them tuna at? And you're like, so I'm going to tell 30 people that are going to tell more people, and then I'm just going to be paddling boats. I just tell them like, why don't you book a trip or figure it out?
Yeah.
You know,
you can book or you can plan your social media out to where your every post is from about 60 days ago.
Yeah, I usually just go daily. You know, I don't even care anymore. It's like if people want to, like, by the time they catch me on like what I'm on, I'm kind of on to something else.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And kind of keep it going. But it does kind of make it fun. And honestly, what I've learned is it does keep people engaged. They're like, what do you got next week? Because you're catching those. I want to book next week. Or be like, oh, I could take you out this afternoon because I got a morning trip. And they're like, all right, perfect. You know?
Yeah.
But the nice thing is, where I'm at, you got, you know, St. Pete, you got Bradenton, you got Anna Maria, you got Longboat, you got Sarasota. I got a lot of people from Lakeland, Florida. So you got a big, diverse, you know, circle, and I have a lot of tourism, but also I have a lot of local clients as well.
Yeah.
That have been awesome friends too. And even, you know, obviously with the holiday season, one of them's like, hey, you're coming to my Christmas party. I don't care if you want to go, you're going. I'm like, all right, I'll go. You know, so, and that going into what we even talked earlier is like some of the relationships you have with those clients and customers, some turn into family and close friends, like,
for sure,
by some of the experiences you've had with them, or days or trips, or, I mean.
Oh yeah, man. Fishing guides, there's a really interesting relationship with a lot of these people. And a lot of these people are like CEOs of big companies. And in a lot of cases, I found like, I was kind of like, you know, I wonder why this guy is being so friendly. And when you really, after you get to know him for, you know, 10 or 15 years, you're like, you know, this guy doesn't have very many friends because everyone he talks to wants something from him.
Yeah.
Right? He's a big, powerful person. Everyone wants to do a deal or do this or do that. And I may be the only person besides his wife or someone that is trying to do something good for him. Right?
Correct. Yeah.
And that is such a weird, like, little kind of thing that you have going on, this dynamic between the fishing guide and there's this big CEO type person. It's like you're the only one that's really interested in, are you having a good time? Are we doing what you want to do? How
correct.
Can I help you? Because everybody else is kind of like, can you help me to
they don't like their job. I mean, you know, like everybody thinks like being a dentist or a doctor is great because they make good money, but like think about how much schooling they had. And like when you really get into that, and then you got to be hunched over and working on somebody and they're having a bad day. When we get them on the boat, they want to have a great day.
Yes.
So, and that like even one of my good customers, he's like, he'll get all emotional sometimes. He's like, I love you, big dog. Give me a hug. He'll be like, man, you don't just take me fishing. You make memories for these people that they'll never forget in their lifetime. And that's cool. I mean, that's
what being a fishing guide's all about right there, man. It's all about catching. I mean, that's where some people get off track early in their career. It's like they're out there trying to catch the world record. They're out there trying to catch the biggest fish. They're trying to catch this or that or be the best one on the dock when they get back. And they're not thinking about, you know, in the pursuit of trying to catch the most wahoo anybody's ever caught in the day, I wore these people out so much that we took a great day and made it really not a great day for them.
You made
it a great day for me because we caught 18 wahoo, but they didn't have a good time. They stopped having a good time after four. And
yeah,
now,
they're like, you and it's funny. Some like it's amazing. You're like having a great day, and you'll look over like, what do you guys want to do? Like, can we just do something different? I'm like, all right, let me see what I can pull out of the rabbit hat now. All right, I guess I'll run this way and try this.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what they want to do, you know? That's communication.
Yeah, no, for sure. I always check in with my customers, even when they're like getting seasick or whatever, maybe like, everybody good? Or do you guys want to go deeper? Do you guys want to go in? And like sometimes, like this is kind of a pretty awesome story. These people that have become amazing friends, they fish with me a bunch. It's like a husband and wife, and they got some friends they'll bring on and stuff like that. So we got lucky and caught an 87.9 pound black grouper.
Dang.
But the thing is, we ran to the spot, and I was like, all right, guys, be ready. There's some giant fish here. Some giant. We keep getting broke off. There's big blacks. There's a lot of red snapper. So we pull up, you know, every drop, everybody's catching like nice 15 pound red snapper. And then my buddy, he's like 6'5", hooks it, and it's on a Speedmaster 16. I actually got the rod right here. I'll show you real quick. And it's actually my dad's old Coonan rod.
Really?
It's a graphite rod.
Oh, that's
so this
cool.
I mean, this one's a little accurate reel, but it was on a Speedmaster 16. So dude hooks it, and I'm like, battle that thing. I was like, that's that big black. So he's like working it. And then my mate he hands the rod off to my mate, and he finishes it off, and we like netted it. And everybody's like, why would you net that? Because I got that giant turtle net I have to bring on the boat. So we netted the 87, or like, it was like 88, we'll say 88 pounds, whatever. Got in the boat, and like, so we already had our limit red snapper. We got this giant black in the boat. And then we're like kind of creeping in the next spot. It kind of was emotional for me because I was like, that was on my dad's rod. We got lucky as can be. It was like on a 60-pound leader, you know, 60-pound top shot, and ate a live thread fin. You know, nice. Just like one of those luck of the deal.
Yeah.
But that memory, like we went to another wreck and we're catching some amberjack. I'm like, what are we doing? I was like, we already got more meat than we can have. I was like, you guys want to go in? They're like, yeah, let's go in. So we just ran in after that. And then we like went over to a friend's house, weighed it and cooked up the fish and, you know, had like a little barbecue. You know, I'll do that for some of my real good clients, or I'll bring them to a restaurant and kind of tie in the whole day and the trip. And people love that.
They love
kind
it.
Of going that the little bit extra, you know, you'll sit down, you know, bring the food to the restaurant. They'll do like a cook your catch and, you know, talk about what went down and all that good stuff.
Yeah, but in 10 years, that guy's going to be telling the story and he's going to say, we went out, we caught this awesome fish. And then we went to his friend's house and weighed it and had this barbecue. And then there's going to be this giant story about this barbecue, right? Yeah. Like, never mind, never mind all the other fish that you caught and all the other things that you saw. It's like, we caught this fish and then we went to this barbecue.
Yeah. Right?
Like, that's what they remember. So we're starting to run out of time a little bit. Tell me again about the date and the time of this, of the Artificial Reef Project.
Yeah, so it's going to be April 21st. It's going to be at the community center. This is like the first actual real event I've done for this project. I've done a couple of the local, you know, seafood fests. I did the Stone Crab Fest recently and sold some shirts, and some people donated to the GoFundMe for Soul Man, and it was cool. I got my kids involved, so they were like hanging out of the booth. I'm like, you know, I have two daughters that are, they just turned 4 and 7 in November. Wow. So they're fired up. And like, she was helping me like bag shirts. And
those are the best models you'll have. You put a hat on them and have them walk around and people will be buying those hats left and right.
And they got like the straight blonde hair. Even my buddy's like, dude, you got straight Targaryen princesses. I'm like, I know. It's like so blonde that it's like silver. I'm actually going to go have lunch with my oldest here at 12. So meet her at the little, she gets all excited. Like, you know, I'll get the little, you know, the badge and we'll walk outside. Sometimes I'll just get the school lunch for her. She feels cool. Like all her friends are like,
that's the best, dude. That's the best. I've got a little girl too, and it is the best. I have two boys too, and they're pretty cool also. But, you
it's
know,
so funny how different boys are than
so
girls.
Different. I mean, when they're that age, the boys just want to kick you in the nuts and wrestle. And then you have like, so I had two boys first and then my daughter. And then it's like, you're expecting to get kicked in the nuts. And she's just like
sweet.
The greatest, sweetest thing in the whole world. It's the greatest time ever. You enjoy that time because it does go away, you know? And
isn't it funny how like we could be like hardcore and manly and this and that, but that little girl says, Daddy, I love you, or can we do this? And you're like, absolutely.
Of course we can.
That's like my number one goal in life is to make sure they're spoiled and happy. I mean, and try to show them my lifestyle and have fun with it. But it's cool to,
you know, the other thing too about having the boys first and then having my daughter is that the boys, they also, like if we gotten on one of those bites like you're talking about, they're going to stay until the sun goes down and you cannot stop fishing. Like they will not stop. But my daughter, you know, we get out there, we pull up to the spot, she catches a permit or something, and she's like,
I'm good.
Do you bring any food? And you're like, yeah, sure. We have a little sandwich or something. And she goes, well, how long do you normally stay out here? It's like, how long do you want to stay out here? And she goes, well, I think I'm good. And you're back to the dock at about 10:45. And she's had a wonderful day. And then you go eat lunch. It's like the greatest ever. I love it. So good. Well, enjoy that time. So if people wanted to learn more about this, if they want to go to this place or to this fundraiser and this event, how do they get in touch with you?
Instagram's always a good way. People contact.
What's your Instagram?
It's Captain Jason Stock.
At Captain Jason Stock. At Captain all written out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then, I got my personal phone number. If they want to, you know, text me or call me, they can do that. I can give you that information.
Okay. We'll put it in the notes. And, if people want to go to this and then,
and also I got the website for my personal charter business and, the Reef Project, I can send you as well.
Okay. So we're going to finish. I usually do this at the beginning, but we're going to finish. You remember that show, $10,000 Pyramid? Do you remember that? You might be too.
No.
Well, anyway, they ask a series of questions as fast as you can answer them. And some of them are funny. Some of them are not funny. And anyway, usually I do it at the beginning with a guest just to kind of get to know them and let people get to know them. But we're going to try it at the end today. So we're going to ask a series of questions. We may edit this down to where we don't use all of them, but you're just going to answer them as quick as you can. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yep. One of your favorite bands.
I got too many.
Just any of them.
We'll just say Milky Chance is good. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Would you rather have $1 million now or 10 million later?
10 million later.
Instagram or Twitter?
Instagram.
One thing you're afraid of?
Being alone.
If you could snap your finger right now and have this, what skill would you choose to master?
Time.
Gamakatsu, TM Co. owner, or must add?
Must add.
Office, Friends, or Parks and Rec?
Parks and Rec.
One piece of technology you rely on heavily other than your phone?
My GPS.
Favorite fish?
Wahoo.
Would you have a reptile as a pet?
I did, yeah.
What was it, a snake?
I had a snake and iguanas and stuff growing up.
Nice. Would you rather put a hook through your hand or cut yourself with a fillet knife?
Cut myself with a fillet knife.
Favorite, coffee, tea, or energy drink?
Coffee.
Mountains or beaches for vacation?
Beaches for sure.
Cake or pie?
Cake.
Would you rather have an encounter with a grizzly bear or free dive with sharks?
Grizzly bear.
Spinning rod or conventional or fly?
A spinning rod.
Olympic, Winter Olympics or Summer Olympics?
Winter Olympics.
Favorite pro wrestler of all time?
Hulk Hogan.
If you could have a fishing themed superpower, what would it be?
Fly like a bird.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
Inshore or offshore?
Offshore.
Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Early bird or night owl?
Both.
Best catch in your career?
93-pound wahoo.
Text or call?
Text.
A movie that makes you laugh?
All the American Pies or Old School or all that, you know.
A place you'd like to visit?
I'm going to go to Costa Rica again.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Vanilla.
And last question, one piece of advice that has served you well?
Listen to customers' feedback.
Good.
Right. Yeah.
That served you well. You've built a great business, a great reputation. I've certainly heard a lot about you, and it's been great to catch up here. We got to get out on the water and
dude, let me know
and go fishing.
Yeah, let me know anytime. I mean, we got a cool fishery, and you know, I could show you a bunch of crazy stuff, and we'll have a good time. Like I usually like if I do like a fun day, just do get a couple boys and you know maybe a pretty girl on the boat and go have fun.
All about it, man. Sounds awesome. Sounds awesome. Well, we have. Sounds like we have three pretty girls to choose from, at least,
yeah.
With our daughters. And that would be awesome. I'd love to bring her.
Yeah, for sure, man.
She loves to fish. All right, man. Well, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. And good luck with your event.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester Life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.